KPTZ now joins the Board of County Commissioners, weekly meeting in progress, for this week's public health updates on COVID-19, live from the Jefferson County Courthouse. This is KPTZ, Port Townsend.
Okay, well, welcome KPTZ listeners. Welcome, Dr. Locke. Nice to see you. Hope you had a restful couple of weeks, but I'm not certain of that. Same to you, Willie. Happy New Year. So, where should we start, Dr. Locke?
Thank you and Happy New Year and welcome to Commissioner Eisenhower and soon welcome to the Board of Health, which meets the third Thursday of each month. This has been a busy holiday season. We've really been ramping up the vaccine program. So we did vaccines on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve and over this weekend. And it's going to become more and more intense with each week. But that's the good news. And I'll get into that. There's a lot of KPTZ questions about vaccines, so I'll cover it in that period of the report. First off, just number-wise, nationally, things have leveled off, but at a very high plateau. So now in the U.S., we are seeing over 212,000 cases a day and averaging 1,300 deaths a day, with some days as high as 3,000 people dying. So this is the worst it's been in the pandemic so far. And most analysts, think that we're still, the worst part of the pandemic still lies ahead for us. Currently, the hot spots nationally, and travelers should be really advised of this, is Southern California, Arizona, and most of the southern U.S. Is seeing very high COVID activity. In Washington State, like the rest of the country, things have leveled off over the last several weeks. We're seeing now, we've had a total of over 250,000 cases in Washington State, over 3,500 deaths, and we're averaging about 2,500 new cases every day in the state. In Jefferson County, we've had 25 cases over the last 2 weeks. And so that brings our two-week rate up to 62.7. To 78.37. So that's up from 62.7 the prior two-week period. So we've seen a slight increase, although we're still one of the lowest prevalence areas in the state of Washington. Clallam County, as it is at 129 per 100,000. Kitsap is at 166 per 100,000. Mason County has taken a big jump upwards and now is 355 per 100,000. And that contrasts to a statewide average of 436 cases per 100,000. There are hot spots in Washington State, like Yakima County and Spokane County, where in Yakima it's over 900 per 100,000. In Spokane, it's 719. We are concerned about the potential for a post-holiday surge. We're already seeing some signs of this in Jefferson County with recent cases having holiday get-together exposures. We've seen very high levels of air travel, both around the Christmas and New Year holidays. So the surge we will see with this will likely not peak until about the middle of January. It takes several weeks to see the consequences of it. Unlike many states, though, Washington State's hospitals are still in pretty good shape. You know, we have ICU beds are open in Seattle if we need them. The hospital reported this morning they've been able to, when they need to make transfers, that's not been a problem. Folks have been asking me, you know, if they did travel over the holidays or if they went to a large sort of multi-household gathering, what should they do? And the answer is that it may be too late for them to have avoided infection, but it's not too late for them to avoid transmitting that infection. So we recommend anyone with out-of-state travel, strict 14-day quarantine when you get back. You should be tested if you develop any symptoms whatsoever. And that should apply too. You know, anyone who went to a large party with multi-households, that those same quarantine requirements will prevent you from spreading any infection you acquire to others. I think we have 18 questions today from KPTZ listeners. Try to go through these as briskly as I can. The first one asks notes that many people have pulsed and advanced directive forms that sort of say they don't want to be put on life support systems, but should they reconsider this in light of the fact that sometimes ventilators need to be used to treat COVID-19? And I would say, yes, it's always good to reevaluate your advanced directives. And most people's advanced directives target what's often called futile or heroic care. So medical efforts that are unlikely to produce a return to health and really end up only prolonging the dying process. But treatment for COVID-19 generally doesn't fall into this category. It's been getting better and better. ICU and ventilator survival is much better now than it was at the beginning of the pandemic. I think that specifying this on an advanced directive is a worthwhile thing to do. If indeed you would like the medical team to do everything they can to try to help you survive a severe case of COVID-19. A question noted, I've seen more people lately wearing masks below their nose. Please remind citizens about proper masking at all times. And to review that, there's two main benefits of wearing a mask. One is to trap the secretions you produce when you're breathing. And the other is to filter the air that you breathe in to reduce your exposure to airborne particles. And when you fail to cover your nose, you're defeating both of these purposes. So you're failing to trap any secretions that are emitted from your nose. And very importantly, you're failing to filter the air that comes into your nose. And we think that's the highest risk for COVID exposure. It's air we breathe in through our nose. If it has the virus in it, that's the place in the body that it's most able to find the receptors it needs to invade and get into our bloodstream. It's also, if you don't cover your nose, you are violating the law in Washington State, because to be properly masked and following the various orders and proclamations, you have to have a mask that covers both your nose and your mouth. A third question is, President-elect Biden has advocated a national mandate, masking mandate for the first 100 days. What effect would this have on the pandemic? And there's been various modeling studies that have said for a long time, if we had gone to a national mask mandate in the summer, we would have prevented hundreds of thousands of cases, thousands, maybe tens of thousands of deaths in the United States. The verdict is in on masking, and as it's one of the most effective ways we have of slowing transmission. And so I very much support that notion of a 100-day or longer national masking mandate. There are still states that over a dozen states that have no masking requirements whatsoever. Question asked, it was alarming to hear that we have discovered a new strain of COVID-19 that's easier to transmit and may complicate the vaccine rollout. Is this something serious? There are indeed new variants of the virus. There's multiple variants we're tracking, actually. And it's important to realize that viruses are always mutating. Every time they copy themselves, they make mistakes, and new variations of the virus emerge, and some of those can be more contagious, and that appears to be what's happened with a strain that's been identified in Britain, and then a related but distinct strain that's emerged in South Africa. These are looking like they are indeed more contagious. One example of the British strain is that in Britain, they had been seeing of close contacts, about 10% of them have been testing positive of the prior strains. With the new strains, it's about 15% of close contacts. So that's 50% more contagious, but still not a super contagious kind of thing. The viruses do have the potential, though, for getting even more infectious as they mutate. Given the fact that the way the vaccine works and the fact that it targets the entire spike protein, it's unlikely that any virus could mutate enough to become resistant to the vaccine, at least in the next several years. You know, as you look over a span of years and years, however, it could be that cumulative mutations would make a strain of COVID-19 that was vaccine resistant. Although one of the advantages of this new generation of vaccines is that it's possible if the spike protein changes, you can just change the messenger RNA in the vaccine to encode for the new spike protein. So we're not considering vaccine resistance to be much of a problem with this. At least in the near term. I have read that many healthcare workers will not take the COVID-19 vaccine. I realize they have a choice, but now I'm more worried that we won't get the herd immunity we need and this pandemic will continue for years. Will medical organizations require staff to get vaccinations? Currently, there are no organizations that I'm aware of that are requiring vaccination. You know, as we all know, this was a vaccine that was developed in an extraordinarily short time period. It's been released under what's called an emergency use authorization. And some people have serious ethical concerns whether you could ever require someone to take an EUA licensed vaccine, which in a sense it is still experimental to some degree. So we're depending right now on the vaccine to sell itself. It's remarkably effective. It has very low side effects. We think most healthcare providers and others will embrace it over time, although there's some that don't want to be at the front of the line, and that's fine. Once we have a fully licensed vaccine, it's likely that some healthcare organizations will require it as a patient safety measure, just as they do now with measles and influenza and several other vaccines. But we're not looking at that anytime soon. Vaccination is going to be voluntary, and we're not going to pressure people who are not comfortable with it to get vaccinated. Next question asks, or posed the question, my friend tested positive for the coronavirus but was asymptomatic. After he quarantines for 14 days, should he have a negative test before he goes back to public? And actually, if you test positive, what we recommend, that requires isolation. So people who are infected need to isolate for either 10 days after they develop symptoms, or if they have no symptoms, 10 days after the date of the positive test. And then quarantine is for those who are exposed to positive cases but don't yet know whether they're infected or not. And the period of quarantine is 14 days. And in Jefferson County, we recommend everyone in quarantine be tested at the midpoint of that quarantine, right around 7 days. And we've had a number of Jefferson County cases that were diagnosed during quarantine. In terms of public health strategies and vaccines, there's a question is, how is the hierarchy of who gets the vaccine first decided? If each state gets to decide, what is the general plan for Washington? This is that developing these priority schemes has been something that's been in the works for several months. There's been a number of national organizations that have worked on it, the National Academy of Medicine and others, to develop a scientific and an ethical framework for distributing a limited resource. You know, at the very beginning of a campaign like this, we don't have as much vaccine as there is demand or need for it. So we have to do some form of prioritization. The official process in the U.S. to do this is the Centers for Disease Control has an advisory board, the Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices, and they came out with specific recommendations for the first tier, what's known as 1A, and then about 2 weeks ago they came out with recommendations for the next two tiers, 1B and 1C. But those are just advisory. It's ultimately up to the state, and specifically in Washington State, it's up to the governor. So the governor's office has finalized their 1A recommendations, but we're waiting for 1B and 1C. And we really need them sooner rather than later, because it takes time for us to identify groups and come up with rosters. We literally got the recommendations the night before we got the first shipment of vaccine for the first batch, and we need more lead time than that. So we're hoping that the next tier of finalized recommendation comes out this week, and the sooner this week, the better. But at a local level, we follow the priorities that are set by the state of Washington. There's a question, what is more important in deciding the hierarchy of who is most at risk for serious COVID disease? Is it advancing age or certain underlying health conditions? And actually, each of these are independent variables. And if you have both, they have an additive effect. Age is probably the most significant. So, and especially age over 75 is associated with a high risk of complications. Also certain kinds of medical conditions. The most severe are things that impair the immune function of like AIDS or a cancer treatment, type 2 diabetes, chronic obstructive lung disease, heart and kidney disease. These are all major risk factors, and these will put an individual into one of the higher priority groups. There was a question, how many vaccinations have we received in Jefferson County, and how many have been used as of today? So I have very up-to-date information on this. I just got off the incident command meeting at the hospital before this meeting. So far, Jefferson County has received two shipments of the Pfizer vaccine. So that's 1,950 doses. Of those, about half have been used. 970 have been administered. 980 are on hand, waiting confirmation from the state that Jefferson County is going to get a second shipment. We're told that second shipment will probably arrive tomorrow. So, and that'll be very good news, because that means that then we can start the vaccination on another 975 people. Unlike many areas of the state, Jefferson Healthcare has been using the vaccine very aggressively. And, you know, our goal is to get it in people's arms as quickly after we get it as possible. There was a question as to what's the progress with first responders, medical workers. What we know, we think at this point we have vaccinated around 61% of everyone in Jefferson County who's on the 1A list. And specifically at Jefferson Healthcare, we've vaccinated 67%. And we don't think we're going to get to 100%. We don't think 100% is going to consent at this point. We've sort of been using 75% as our operational target. And as soon as we think we've covered the 1A list, we'd like to move ahead with the 1B and then eventually 1C. But that's going to take some go-ahead from the state to do that. Under current projections, we think by the middle of the month, maybe even a little earlier, we will start doing people on the 1A list in Jefferson County, which likely will be those 75 years of age and older, and certain essential workers. But we're not sure exactly how that group's going to be defined by the state.
I think you said 1A. Did you probably meant a different?
No, sorry. I meant we're doing 1A now. So we'll go to the 1B list, hopefully by the middle of January.
Dr. Locke, a question. I think you mentioned that you have that there's still about 900 doses available. Is that being held in reserve for the second shot for the first round of people?
Yes, exactly, because they Jefferson County was one of the first counties in the country to get the vaccine. So we've already started doing the second round. The first group of second vaccinees was yesterday, on Sunday. And so all those folks that got it in the middle of December are now going to be revaccinated in the next week and a half. But it looked, and we weren't absolutely certain that we were going to get a second shipment to do that. But now it appears likely. The state sent Jefferson County a shipment that they didn't order right after the first one. And so we've been going back and forth with them. You know, is this the second shipment, or can we add even more people to the list? But we'll know that for sure, we think, by tomorrow. A question asks, how will people be notified of vaccine appointments? And we're working on this at a local level, at a state level. People who are who we know about, who are going to healthcare providers, we will try to notify them. But there'll also be a mechanism for anyone who thinks their point in line has come up is to seek vaccination. The state has opened up a website that they call Phase Finder, where you go on the website, you answer some questions, and it tells you where you are in line and where you can get vaccinated. And Jefferson Healthcare is what's known as an open pod. So they are not just vaccinating their own patients or hospital employees. It's anyone who's eligible. It's our plan to vaccinate through the public hospital district, and we hope in time to open other vaccination sites around the county. As the handling requirements of the Pfizer vaccine are very stringent, and we can only really handle that in the vicinity of hospitals with ultra cold freezers. But the Moderna vaccine is much easier to handle. It's just kind of a regular vaccine refrigerator and freezer. So that's something that we can move out into pharmacies and clinics around the county as we start to get supplies of that. There was a question asked, how long does it take to develop immunity from the vaccine? And We know it's about 10 to 14 days after you get the vaccine, immunity starts to develop. And there is some immunity after the first dose. For the Pfizer vaccine, it was calculated 52% effectiveness. For the Moderna vaccine, it's probably a little better than that, but we don't know for sure. And then it's 10 days after the second dose is really where you get the full effectiveness. So both vaccines are up to about 95% effectiveness after the second dose. With the Pfizer vaccine, the second dose is 3 weeks after the first. With the Moderna vaccine, it's 4 weeks after the first. And then I think I answered this question. How do people know where they are in the list? I urge folks to check out the Washington PhaseFinder site. Also, Jefferson Healthcare and Jefferson County Public Health, we will be doing our best to get this information on our website as well. And to answer as many questions as come up, because our goal is to get everyone vaccinated. We can't do it all at once. But, you know, over time, you know, we'll be able to serve the entire county population. And that's really the end game for the pandemic. That's how we bring this to a close, is getting very high levels of vaccination. We're currently, the best current model is we need to hit 75% nationally of either vaccine plus natural immunity. To really stop the kind of COVID spread that we're seeing now. A few more questions. It's known that the vaccine protects the patient from illness, but how does it affect contagiousness? And that is something we don't know yet. The clinical trials that resulted in the licensure of these vaccines just were looking at whether it prevented clinical disease, and especially severe manifestations of disease. And that's where the 95% comes from. The studies were not designed to see if the people had low levels of virus in their system. So that's being done now. People who are vaccinated, there's a study group that are having their nose swabbed every other day for months to see if people who are vaccinated at any point develop low levels of infectiousness. From a theoretical standpoint, we think the vaccine very likely does prevent infectiousness, just based on the way it works. But we haven't proven that, and it is important to know for sure. A question that, I am a 76-year-old woman with an underlying medical condition, and my husband is 80. How and who do we contact to get an appointment for our immunization? Well, this would put your ages would put you into the 1B group, and so that's coming up within another week or two, and we'll have the information will be on Jefferson Healthcare and Jefferson County Public Health's website. And our main delivery model is going to be a drive-through clinic. The hospital has constructed a four-lane drive-through vaccination facility that's behind Manresa Castle. And so we're going to attempt to do very high-volume drive-through vaccination, you know, possibly 7 days a week, whatever it takes to get people vaccinated. It will be by appointment. So we'll schedule people a time to come in and we'll get through the list that way. Another question asks, a household where one member is 78 years old, who would be in group 1B, and then the wife is 74 years old, so would be in group 1C, and asked, you know, would they have to come in separately? And it's a good question, and we're anticipating that we're going to be able to use common sense and clinical judgment in situations like this, and that where we have members of households that are of similar age, that what we really want to do is vaccinate both people at the same time. That's just one appointment. It means less exposure for them out in public. It means less exposure for the people that are giving the vaccines. So as much as possible, we will try to cluster people within households and do it in the most efficient way we can, in the way that gets the most people vaccinated as quickly as possible. Then a second to the last question asks about waste speech. If Jefferson County has vaccines that must be used at the end of the day, will there be a system for notification so that unthawed vials are not wasted? We already have this system in place. We are pursuing a goal of 0% wastage, and so far we're on track for that. We have not wasted a single dose of the vaccine, and it's a very fragile vaccine. So in the Pfizer vaccine, once you reconstitute the vaccine, you've got about 6 hours to use it. And it comes in 5-dose vials, although we've been reliably getting 6 doses out of every vial. But we have to use it once we've reconstituted. So we have an on-call list for people, mostly they're people scheduled to be vaccinated the next day. But we have them on call that if we end up, we have more vaccine and we're done with the day's appointments, we call people in to use up that remaining vaccine. It's even more of an issue with the Moderna vaccine that has 10 doses in a vial. And once you take any doses out of it, you also have to use it within 6 hours. And that's because neither of these vaccines have any preservatives in them. So they have a very limited shelf life. And then the final question asks that there's been discussion, there's been discussion in Britain about inoculating as many people as possible just with the first dose, as opposed to getting the second dose on schedule. And what are my thoughts on this argument? And this is controversial. I would say most U.S. Experts and health professionals are against this idea of partial vaccination, in that 52% protection is better than nothing, but we really need the very high level of immunity that the two-dose vaccine gives. What is probably a better idea, and it's still being tested, is the Moderna vaccine is considerably higher potency than the Pfizer. The Moderna vaccine uses 35, the Pfizer vaccine uses 30 micrograms of the messenger RNA. The Moderna vaccine uses 100 micrograms. And so giving the Moderna in a half dose, at least in limited clinical trials, was almost as effective as giving it full dose. So there is a program underway to see if we can give the Moderna vaccine at lower dosage levels and still get the same effect in a two-dose regimen, and then that would double the number of people we can vaccinate with the Moderna vaccine. But we don't think one-dose vaccination is a good idea. Now, not only is it less effective, but it probably the duration of immunity is considerably less as well. So I think we will stick with a two-dose regimen in the U.S., but we may find that we can stretch the Moderna vaccine further than we originally thought. And that said, and one question for the EOC that I'll toss to Willie.
Yeah, go for it, Willie.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. So the single question for us at the EOC was whether or not that emergency medical technicians or EMTs from any of our local fire departments were going to be helping out in administering the vaccine. And at this point in time, we know that they're not yet, although it's certainly not off the table, but as Dr. Locke alluded to, right now the plan is for Jefferson Healthcare to operate that drive-through testing facility. And the hope is that those EMTs can continue to serve in their normal capacity given the limited resources of our local fire department. However, one thing we are doing at the EOC is starting to register some community members as emergency volunteer workers, specifically those with a medical background, so that if additional resources are needed, we can call on some of the expertise of some of our the retirees within our community to be able to help out. So as I've done a couple of times before, I'll issue another call for volunteers, specifically those with medical backgrounds, who are retired, who might be willing and able to help out. Please contact my department, jcdem@co.jefferson.wa.us. You'll fill out some paperwork, get background checked, and we'll have you register as an emergency worker. So if we need to provide some extra resources to healthcare, public health, and delivering the vaccine, again, we'll be able to tap into the kind of vast volunteer retiree resources we have in this county. So feel free to contact me if you have any questions there, but I think that's the main plan to augment some of our existing resources, again, happen to be experienced in the county. So whether you're a retired doctor, nurse, any sort of medical background, feel free to reach out. We'll get you registered up, and then we'll tap you on the shoulder if that time comes.
Great. Well, you have the floor, Willie. Do you have anything else you want to share? We are at risk for flooding right now, and we're certainly cognizant of poor folks living without shelter right now in this weather as well.
Yeah, I mean, so, and as I've done before, just kind of want to remind folks that just because we are living under a global pandemic, some of the other hazards and some of the other threats and risks that we face, I can't hit the pause button on those, unfortunately. So as we saw this weekend with an overwhelming amount of rain, 101 south of Brennan was closed for a number of hours. Due to water on the roadway from the significant rain that we saw. So we still run that risk of isolation. We're still seeing winter storms. I know PUD was dealing with several power outages all over the county last week that just totaled in, I think, a little under 3,000 at height. So a continued reminder to folks to stay vigilant, not only in terms of the pandemic and wearing a mask and social distancing, but check in on your emergency kit, prepare for power outages, etc. So that's really the only thing I wanted to say. No other major updates from the EOC. As Dr. Locke said, the big activities right now are regarding vaccination rollout and planning. So just a continued reminder to stay vigilant from me.
Great, thank you. And I will point out, which neither of you did humbly, just the appreciation that KPDZ sent for both of your willingness to show up here every week. It's something that I'm proud that we've been able to continue. I'm sure that it's heavy lift for you in busy weeks, so thank you for doing it. I don't know that we have discussed whether we plan to continue it throughout, but it sure seems to have a lot of value. Questions for Dr. Locke or Willie?
You've answered all my questions, but I just want to throw my weight behind continuing this. If Dr. Locke and Willie have capacity, I think it is really valuable and valued by the community as well. So, yeah, appreciate having us.
I would just add that I know you're a lifeline for a lot of older folks in our community, including my mom, who sits at home religiously and listens to you every week. So thanks for this, and I think we should continue it as long as there's updates to be given.
Great. One question, Dr. Locke, I'm curious, are you engaged with the schools right now in discussions about potential reopening?
Yes, very much so. In fact, we meet every Tuesday morning, so we'll meet again tomorrow. And the provisional plan, and I don't see any reason that they'll deviate from this, is Brennan is considering, actually they may have started back up today. They were targeting January 4th, and then the other school districts are looking at the middle of the month to resume in-person education. We know that we will likely get cases and exposures within the school, but we feel we're much better prepared to deal with them now.
Great.
We've gained experience as a state doing this, so we'll do everything we can to keep it out of the schools. But just the fact that that can happen should not be a reason that we deny students the benefits of in-person education. So we, the health department, we're committed to doing whatever we can. We have a big meeting scheduled with the schools next week to go over outbreak investigation at schools, just to get them prepared for it.
Okay, anything else for Dr. Locke or Willie? Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us. Really glad to have you on the team. We enter into year two of this.
Thank you.
All right, let's go back to the consent agenda.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend, and we've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of County Commissioners meeting at the courthouse. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. And again, thank you for listening. I would say again, thank you, Dr. Locke. Thank you, Willie Bentz. Thank you, commissioners.